Okay, good morning. La nochachot v'chol amazinim. To those present and those listening, good morning to everyone. We read this week the Sedra Vayetze. No, you have to go, Red.
Better alive than unfit.
That's correct. Thanks for the plug. That's copyrighted, you know. So we read this week the Sedra Vayetze. Welcome all our guests, meaning you. So I want to wish a mazel tov to, we wondered where Naomi Schiff was last Monday. She gave birth Sunday night.
Ah.
All right, so I said to her, you know, it could have come Monday morning. It was Sunday night. But the baby was named Monday, last Monday, Gabriella. So mazel tov to Naomi, to Kenny, and the whole family. The Torah says that Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva Vayela Charona. Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, really fleeing from his brother. He encountered a certain place, he came upon a place, and he lodged there, went to sleep there, because the sun had set. And the pasuk goes on, I guess quit the whole pasuk. He took from the stones of the place, he placed the stones around his head, vayishkav b'makomahu, and he slept in that place. We'll start with the first medrash, very famous one, introduces to us a very fundamental idea of Jewish philosophy. Vayishkav b'makom, so literally means the place. Okay, who else do we refer to as the place? God, Hashem. Vayishkav b'makom, Rav Huna b'shem Rabbi Ami Amar. Why do Chazal characterize, call God, or term God by the name Makom, meaning place? We use it pretty frequently. I mean, Rachman was not Hamakom Yinachem Eschem. Shehu Mikomo Shel Olam, because God is the place of the world. Ve'ein olamo mikamo. The world is not his place. Meaning God is not in the world. The world, better said, is in God. Min madichsiv hine makom iti. God said to Moshe, behold, the place is with me. Heve kadosh baruch hu mikamo shel olam. Ve'ein olamo mikamo. God is really the place of the world. The world is not, God is not in the world. God is not in creation. Nor is God a creation. God always existed. So what God as Makom means, that God created time and space. Time and space that we take for granted, God created. Because he created time and space, he's not contained with it. He's actually beyond it. But we have to acknowledge this is an idea that's almost impossible, if not very difficult, for man to comprehend. All right, because we live in the world, so we think everything is part of the world. Everything part of the world, and naturally, Rachman Elson, we slot God into that as well. He's all, you know, he's a part of the world, and it's not in the sense that Melo Chol Aretz Kvodo, that the entire universe is filled with his glory. We just see God as another part of the world, which is actually a heretical concept from our perspective, and is incorrect as well. Rather, Hu Mikomo Shel Olam. He is the place of the world. The world exists. God is infinite. The world, the universe, is in fact contained somehow, some inexplicable way, within God, of course, is non-physical. But nonetheless, by Ethgaba Makom, here he encountered God. I want to add one point, which is a pasuk that we say all the time in the Kedusha. Baruch Kavod Hashem Mimikomo. All right? It's the statement of Yecheskel, so the third parak of Yecheskel, we say in Kedusha, we say the whole pasuk, in fact, in Ubal Tzion, Vatiseini Ruach Vashmacharai Korash Gadol, he heard behind him, so to speak, Korash Gadol, it was the angel saying, Baruch Kavod Hashem Mimikamo, blessed is the glory of God, and blessed is God Mimikamo, from his place. So what's his place? If Hu Mikamo Shel Olam, Vein Olam Mikamo, what's Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimikamo? What's his place? Mimikamo, Yifem Berachamim, we say in the Kedusha Shabbos morning. that from his place, so to speak, he turns to us berachamim. So one idea, of course, is that, again, because the impossibility of language, we use a term that makes sense to us, makom, even if it's not completely appropriate to God. But the Rambam wasn't even enamored with that, and he said makom has a specific reference. See, we understand makom as place, as a physical place, but he understood makom as in the Mora, makom really means a level, all right, a degree, even a place. In other words, we use the term place euphemistically as well. We'll say about someone, you know, he was put in his place. I'm not talking a physical concept, or he's in a different place now. She's in a different place now. It's also not a physical concept. Place, makom, the Rambam says, means here, it's a borrowed term, and it means a level of accomplishment, a degree of perfection. We relate to God as the ultimate in the Shlemus, that is the most philosophical we'll get today. We relate to God as the ultimate in perfection. That's the primary attribute we attribute to God, perfection. Mekomo means from that level of perfection, which is really incomprehensible to us, Baruch, so we cite, he should be blessed. I mean, we cite the angels saying, may God be blessed in accordance with his level of perfection. Why? Because who are we to bless God? I mean, we're frail, fragile, finite creatures. So who even to bless God? Therefore, all we can do is cite, quote, the blessings of the angels, saying, Baruch Kavod Hashem Mimikomo, may God be blessed in accordance with his level of perfection. Part of this is to recognize also that the world depends on God, all right? The world depends on God. God doesn't depend on the world at all. And it's such a common fallacy that people have today, even sometimes people in the Jewish world, the religious world, that we do things for God, we help God, etc. All which is complete nonsense. We understand the magnitude of the being, the Borei Olam, the Ribono Shel Olam, to whom we daven and who guides us in the mitzvos and grants us and the world life. The notion that he's dependent on anything that we do is completely frivolous. But nonetheless, people believe it. It just makes God more real to them, even if it is a ascribing imperfection to him.
I think it starts from childhood.
Childhood,
yeah,
that's correct.
Because
I think you're right.
Teachers are, you know, I taught... You know,
the old man with the white beard syndrome.
Whatever.
As I get older and my beard gets whiter, I take offense at. But yes, correct. That's correct. I mean, children especially, you know, that's the image that's given. Granted, in the non-Jewish world, it's fairly common,
right,
and
yes,
that seeps into whether it's that image of the old man with a beard or Mother Nature, which is just the feminine version. It's a similar thing. Also, it's not God, you know, an incorporeal God, but Mother Nature. So it helps the people who are not philosophers deal with the reality of God, but it, of course, it misconstrues it. So therefore, it's problematic. Much one of the point, which is a beautiful idea in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer on the Sedra, he says that where's God's place? Mimakomo, wherever tzaddikim are. In B'chol HaMakom Asher Azkira Shmi, Avoylecho V'Rachticho, wherever tzaddikim, wherever righteous people are, that's where God is found. So that's makom. From that place, from that level, so Hamakom relates to us as well. Okay, next. Dovra Acher, number two. Mahu Vayivga, what does Vayivga mean? Tzali. Tzali means to pray. All right, Davin. Bamakom, in the place. Tzali Bevesa Mikdosh. So here we know two things. Vayivga Bamakom means that Yaakov came to the Makom of Mikdosh. He was on Har Moriah. And what did he do there? Vayifga, tzali, he prayed. Okay. How do we know that Vayifga means to pray? It means to meet, to encounter. Omar Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rabbi Shimon Levi said, of course, the famous Gemara in Brachos, Daf Chaf Vav Amud Beis, Avos Harishonim Hiskilu Sholosh Tfilos. Our fathers ordained three different prayers, meaning the three tfilos of the day. Avram Tikein Tfila Shachris. Avram ordained, composed, set for us the structure and time of Tfila Shachris, the morning prayer. Shenemar Vayashkem Avraham Baboker Elamakom Asher Omad Shom. What's the reference here? After the destruction of Sodom, the next day Avram got up, he's standing on the mountains of Judea, gazing down on the destruction, the smoke rising from this city, the city that had been destroyed. He got up in the morning, Elamakom, to the place, Asher Omad Shom. Ve'ein Amida Elatfilo. Amida, standing, means to daven. Shenemar Vayamod Pinchas Vayafalel. Pinchas stood and Vayafalel means to judge. We've discussed in the past. Vayafalel means to judge. Lhit Palel means to judge oneself. Alright, so our verse says in Parshas Lech Lecha, where the term is first used, Parshas Vayera, where the term is first used, that tefillah is a reflexive act, meaning a person reflects on himself or herself. Litpalel, literally in that sense, means to judge ourselves by the standards of the Torah. That every day we see what the Torah's level requires of us, and we measure precisely where we are in terms of that. But let's not get distracted. The Avos were misaking the tefillos. Avram was misaking tefillah shachris. Amido, Yitzchak tikein tfilas mincha. Yitzchak ordained the afternoon prayer. Shenemar vayitzei Yitzchak lasuach basodeh lifnos arev. Yitzchak went out lasuach. What it means to meditate in the field. Lifnos arev ein sicha el tfilo. Sicha means tfilo as well. Shenemar eshpoch lifnos sichi. All right. I'll pour before him my speech, my conversation. And from our pasuk, we see the Yaakov tikein tefilas arvis. Yaakov ordained the night tefila, shenema vayifga b'makom ve'ein pegiya ela tefila. Pegiya, this type of encounter, means prayer as well, based on the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, al tisof adam v'al tifga bi. Don't intercede with me, meaning don't pray, don't bother me at this point. Okay, we have to understand, because granted we know of the Avos' roles in the tefillah, prayer generally, but what are these three levels of tefillah, these three different dimensions of tefillah? And we have three corresponding to really six all told. Avram, his tefillah was an amida, standing, and therefore shachris. Yitzchak's tefillah was sicha, conversation, corresponding to mincha, and Yaakov's tefillah was pegiya, corresponding to ma'ariv, to arvis, the evening prayer. So what are these three? Are there many different interpretations, some easier to understand, some a little more difficult, but let's take Rav Kook, because I think he has a very firm grasp on these ideas, and we'll see some interesting ideas about tefillah generally. What's Amida? Rav Kook says Amida, Shachris is the first feel of the day. Shachris is the first feel of the day because when we're out and about during the day, we can easily lose our Yirah Shamayim, our reverence for God. We can easily lose our ethical standing because of the Yetzer Hara, because of the Taivas Hazman, because of our instincts, because of the desires that we have. So when we're out in the material world, in the world of activity, in the world of physical accomplishment, it's much harder to retain our spiritual standing. So Rav Kook writes, and this is an Ein Ayah on Maseches Brachos, Chavav HaMabez, that tefillah really intensifies both, and it strengthens us so we don't succumb. And this, of course, is a requirement, an essential requirement of the morning, all right? Shachris, because Shachris means we have a whole day of activity ahead of us. The best method, the best formula that we have in order not to completely plunge into the day and to be gripped by the physical world is that the very first thing we do. Ah, so it's a chiyuv for men to do it right away in the morning. Women have more flexibility, to do it really any time during the day. But of course it's better in the morning too. Before we plunge into the world and the world grabs hold of us and even conquers us, we step back and acknowledge the godless Hashem, and therefore, that's Amida. Amida is we stand. We stand as individuals. We gaze upon the world like Avram did. We gaze upon the world that really is in front of us to come. That's why you're supposed to have a shul with windows. You see the world outside. We stand, and then we acknowledge the array of forces that we'll deal with, and our Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us the fortitude with which to withstand that. I should say that the Rav said here, Amida is a very important point, because Avram was the first who did it. There was only one predecessor to Avram who encountered God, and that was Adam HaRishon. And what did he do? He ran away. He hid. He tried to hide from God. Avram teaches us, the Rav said, that man doesn't have to hide from God. Man can stand.
Didn't Noah have any...
God spoke to him. I don't think the Torah says that God, that Noah spoke to God, but God certainly spoke to Noah. Since Noah also tried to hide for a time, you know, didn't go into the Teva right away. But Avram was the first one to be an Omeid. An Omeid meaning he's given the capabilities to stand. God has taught him how to interact with the world, and he can retain his level. That's Amida for Shachris. Yes.
Isn't Amida
Shmon Esrei? It's all Shmon Esrei. Tfila Shmon Esrei. Tfila Shmon Esrei. Here we're only talking about the Shmon Esrei. What Yitzchak Sicha? Sicha for Mincha. So the Rashbam says here that the Sicha doesn't mean conversation. Others have that shot, and it makes sense too in context. Sicha is Miloshon Sichim, like a bush, like shrubbery. Lasuch Pasadeh, correct. Lasuch Pasadeh. The Rashbam says he went to see his property, his orchards, his vineyards. Lasuch basadeh, how does that become tefillah then? That's the question. So Rav Kook writes that like sichim, like bushes, like shrubbery, it means there's growth. There's growth. We sense growth. The afternoon, we already feel a relief from the burdens of the day. I know not if the kids are coming home, but nonetheless, it's a different type of burden. We feel a relief from the burdens of the day, and therefore, no longer do we have to be actively involved in the world of conquest. We have time to step back and look for growth of the soul, growth of the nefesh. The natural effect of tefillah, Rav Kook says, is that the soul flowers, and it produces branches, and our inner world is perfected, and we're able to pour our emotions into it, right? If you think about it, in the daily world, certainly the world of activity, the world of commerce and business, etc., there's really no room for emotional expression. You know, nobody really cares how the doctor, the lawyer, or the businessman feels. They care more about what they accomplish, all right? So tefillah gives us the ability to pour our hearts into a realm in which the nefesh will be able to blossom and to grow. When the day is done, the soul is free to blossom. And that's Yitzchak went to the Sadeh, Lasuch Basadeh, Lifnos Orev. At the end of the day, that's when we feel again this ability to relate to God in a way that we no longer fear the world, and then our soul can naturally find a deeper expression. All which leads to Ma'ariv, and that's our Sedra. Vayifgaba makom, pegiya, ein pegiya el tfila, that's tfilas Ma'ariv. What's pegiya? Pegiya is a chance encounter. Alright, I mean, you don't expect to see someone, but you meet them. It's not like a pegisha, where you set up a meeting with somebody. The chance encounter, so to speak, is the soul's natural yearning. This natural yearning of the soul, and by the way, nighttime is always synonymous with nevuah, with prophecy, with visions. the soul's natural yearning cannot be fulfilled or satisfied by rote or by obligation or by routine. That's what Ma'ariv is Rishus, you know, classically. And from a halacha perspective, it's an optional tefillah. It's obligatory because we've accepted it as obligatory. A lot of women don't daven Ma'ariv for that very reason, because it's an optional tefillah. But optional means it can't be confined. It's just a natural yearning of the soul to come closer to God, really even freed of the confines of the body. What happens when we sleep? Pure intellect, at least pure imagination. The body plays very little role in sleep. So night, therefore, is the time for visions. It's the time for imagination. It's almost unplanned. But, and that's Pigiyah, Ifgaba Makom, Vayolanshon. But to sleep there, it refines the soul, enables us to reach quasi-prophetic levels, right? Like a chalom is a 60th of a nevuah. At night we can get insight into ourselves and into the world that sometimes we can't get the rest of the day. In fact, very often a person goes to sleep with a problem, and by the morning the problem is resolved, meaning the head is heavy at night, but sleep clears the head. It's a palliative. It's very relaxing. It clears the head. Sometimes you can't sleep, which is a problem. But if it clears the head, and you wake up in the morning with a clear head, you get a fresh perspective on the problem, and it could more readily be resolved. So these are the three aspects of tefillah. The amida, the standing, so that we're able to fortify ourselves for the day ahead. The reflective sikha enables the soul to grow. And the pigiyah, the natural yearning of the soul that comes at night. I thought of something else as well. I mean, look at many, many different pshatim on this, and it could be this is resonating in my mind from I heard it elsewhere. But to whom before we stand? Da'alef ne'miyato meid, before the melech. We stand before a king. Sicha, as most Mefarshim learn, is conversation. To whom do we converse? Friends. All right? Sicha is a dialogue. A yadid. We dialogue with the yadid. And pegiyah, to encounter someone, vayolen shom, which implies a sense of ease and comfort, that's with an av, with a parent, a father, a mother. So you see, Hashem appears to us, so to speak, in those three guises, as a melech, as an av, tavinu malkeinu, and even as a yadid. Yadid Hashem. Of course, for a person to be classified as yadid Hashem is a very high level. Shlomo was given that name even, Yadidya, friend of God. But you know, Rambam says if it's true, but he can reach a level where God says, this is my yadid. Those are the three dimensions. The melech, the yadid, and the av, they're all reflected in the different tefillos. And of course, this should all be reflected in our relationship with God as well. Okay. All right, so that's the philosophy for the day. Now we could move on. It becomes a little more easy to digest. Yes, ma'am.
Rav Kook.
Rav Kook
was the first one.
Well, his father was also Rav Kook.
Who was the first interpretation?
Rav Kook from Einaya. That was Rav Kook, right? Okay, sure.
Is that what you hear? I mean, we have teachers, Rabbeim, who refer to are establishing a relationship with God. I mean,
I don't always use.
That.
I don't commonly
hear
use
that
those.
30 years.
Yes, that's right. That's a.
But within the last
a much
10
more
years,
modern
I've
term,
been hearing
right.
of establishing a relationship with
right,
God.
Right. Right.
Kind of
yeah, it's a new thing. I think that it has to be.
Sorry, I just found this. Is anyone missing it?
What is that? A little purse? That's someone's purse?
Do you have a place for
me? Yeah, just go next door to the office and just drop it in there. Thank you. Yeah. Right outside, outside and make a left. Next building over.
Oh, yeah.
Brick building. Yeah, I myself am not prone to those types of characterizations. It's very modern. It's very touchy feely, right? Do I present as a touchy feely kind of guy?
Yeah.
Probably not. Yeah, sure. But you have to know, I do cringe on occasion Look, I have to understand the emotion, and it's you can't say it's a bad thing, but it's in Israel, you drive on the road, and a lot of people have a bumper sticker. I've seen dozens of times, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Ohev Otcha.
Yeah.
All right? I don't know. I mean, obviously we say, Avos Hashem is a great mitzvah. Avos Hashem l'kayem v'chol avo v'chol nat v'chol modecha. Just strikes me as almost trivializing the concept. All right? Like, you have bumper sticker for that, and for, you know, for ice cream, and for some soccer team too. So it's very hard to use the same terminology relating to God as we would relating to something in our world. But nonetheless, people, some people find it very comforting and very enriching as well. And I can see it has a role in tefillah too. I see it has a role in tefillah. And that's what you're talking about. It's Yaakov, the pigiyah. Pigiyah means an encounter. All right? Sicha as well. Sicha is the most intimate of the forms. All right? Because sicha literally means a conversation, which is a dialogue. I guess we could modify it and call it meditation, but nonetheless, we perceive it as a dialogue. And the classicalists who understood tefillah did see tefillah as a dialogue. Even though God is not necessarily responding to us in the same way we're communicating to Him, nonetheless, He is responding. Shomei tefillah. So therefore, the response suggests a relationship, okay, Shomei tefillah. But I don't know if it's the same form that, as you're saying, people refer to it like that.
Yeah. I mean, when you think of a relationship, the one strong relationship you think of is Moshe Rabbeinu with HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
That's correct.
You don't really think of...
Well, no, all the others did. The Avos did also.
Yeah, but not to
every Navi does to that
but
extent.
But not to the extent that Moshe Rabbeinu.
No, of course not. Nobody did. Well, Kamiso Kemosho, nobody could. The Torah says, upon him. So no one could have that relationship. The fact that you can't have that relationship does not necessarily imply that there can't be any relationship. It's just, again, the whole use of the terminologies of relationships, friendships, it's a little hard for me to accept. But nonetheless, I see where it's valuable.
Maybe your problem more is sitting on the bumper sticker.
I just said that's a pasuk. Avos Hashem is a mitzvah, correct?
Do you think it's improper? Because I feel like it's improper to have Hashem on
Hashem. I think it's a very important message of bitachon. All right, that we should accept that. Again,
we have to express it on the
back. I understand, right? Look, the fact is, let's say a Jew wears a yarmulke, you're expressing an idea also, okay?
About
Yiras, I understand, but about Yiras Hashem, expressing an idea. Look, I see both sides. I see why people want to have it, I see people wouldn't want to have it, but the sentiment is a very, the sentiment's a valuable one, okay? I just hope that if that same bumper is crashed into from behind by someone else, that he retains that same sentiment. It's all from Hashem.
I just think it's such an unholy place.
Unholy. Well, it's not unholy, it's neutral. Look, I understand. I think it would be far better if in Israel, instead of having HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Ohev Otcha, they have a HaFrei Echa Kama Ocha. It would be much better. Maybe even drive a little better if they had that. All right. Okay, next. So Vayishkav, still the first pasuk. Vayishkav b'makom ahu. Yaakov went to sleep in that place. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya, as you recall, we've had a lot of machlokos between the two of them, and I've got to talk. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kan shachav, he slept here. Avol kol yudalad shona kol basre shona shaya tamun beveis eiver, lo shachav. Yaakov went from here to the base Aver to learn 14 years. Aver was still alive, by the way. Shem had died just a few years before. They lived long lives, last of that generation, they lived long lives. So here he slept. But the 14 years he was in yeshiva, he didn't sleep at all. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Nechemya Amar. Rabbi Nechemya said, Kan shachav, he slept here. Avol kol esrim shana sha'amar v'veso sholavon lo shachav. The 20 years he was in Lavan's house, there he didn't sleep.
It makes sense.
Okay, sure, it made sense. What's the point here? What's the machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya? What are they arguing over? What's Chazal trying to teach us? So the question is, what was Yaakov's mindset at the time? What was he most afraid of as he embarked the first time? He was 63 years old, first time leaving his parents' house, what was he most afraid of? Rabbi Yehuda says he was most afraid of the spiritual threats that would be ahead of him. So he girded himself, so to speak, for spiritual combat in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. So here he slept. You know, it was a transition between his parents' house and this holy place, between his parents' house and the world ahead. The world ahead was his immediate world, where he would have to fortify himself with the ideas of Torah. Reb Nechemia says no, what he was most afraid of and had to be most vigilant about was the physical threats to his life. Arami Ovedovi, that Lovan tried to kill him, tried to destroy him. The truth is, you can make a cogent argument that the second Reb Nechemia's shot really encompasses both. That in Lovan's house for 20 years, he had to be vigilant both physically and spiritually, because the dangers of both were prevalent. Okay.
You can't really consider a Reb Nechemia's. Then you have to really consider.
Reb Nechemia's. Rabbi Yehuda.
Yeah.
Well, it means that
it's not all encompassing.
Rabbi Yehuda is not all-encompassing. Rabbi Yehuda's idea is that when he was tumen beveis eva lo shochav, meaning what he wanted to do is just completely be immersed in holiness, and that would steal him for the years ahead, which in fact it did.
Are the two opinions diametrically opposed?
No, they're just two different ideas, right? They're two different ideas. Yeah. Okay, it's the end of that pasuk, second pasuk, Vaykach me'avnei ha'makom. He took from the stones of the place. Now, Chazal note a discrepancy in the psukim. Here it says, Vaykach me'avnei ha'makom, he took from the stones of the place. And then at the end of the story, he says, Ve'o'even hazos. Vaykach eso'even asher somer asher sov. That's later on, pasuk... Yudches. So, what's the pshat? Avnei Hamakom, stones of the place, and Evan. Alright, so Rashi says what he says. Let's see. Let's try not doing Rashi. Let's see what the Medrash says. Again, Rabbi Yehuda of Nechemia, V'Rabbanon. It's a three-way machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Shnei Mesrei Avonim Natal. He took 12 stones. Because they're questioning how many stones did he take? It's plural, Avnei Hamakom. Rabbi Yehuda says he took 12 stones. Kach gazar Kadosh Baruch Hu shumamet shnei masar shvatim. This is how God decreed he'd be able to stand up to father 12 tribes. Amar, he said, Avram lohemidon, Yitzhak lohemidon. Yeah, Avram could not produce 12 tribes, nor Yitzhak. Ani, can I do it? How could I do it? He was afraid. Maybe he wouldn't be able to fulfill his mission. He said, "Imis achos hein shneimas avonim zolazo." If these 12 stones become mended together, molded together, meaning they unify, yodea anisha ani mamed yud beishvatim. This way, they'll know I'll be the progenitor of these 12 tribes. Kamen shenis achu yud beiz avonim zolazo yodashu mamed yud beishvatim. Once they did become together, the avnei hamakom became the Evan, the one stone, then he knew that he would do it. Meaning it was a symbolism of 12 into one, the 12 being the Shvatim. That's Reb Yehuda. Reb Nechemia says it wasn't 12 stones, it was 3 stones. Shoshavanim. It should be Shoshavanim, but whatever. 3 stones. Amar. Avram Yichayet HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shmolov. God's name rested on Avram. God's name rested on Yitzchak. Vani, what about me? Imis achos hein gimel avonim zolazo. If these 3 stones become unified, I'll know shakadosh baruch hu miyached shmo aloi, that God will unify his name on me as well. He did, because we say Elokei Yaakov in the davening. Kevin shenisachu yod shakadosh baruch hu miyached shmo aloi. Once it happened, avnei hamakom became heaven, then Yaakov knew that dimension would be satisfied as well. And the Rabbanan Amri Miyot, whenever you have a general klal, whenever you have plural mentioned, plural always means 2, the Rabbanan say, unless it specifies more. So here, 2 stones were taken. Why 2? Shnaim. Avram Yotza Menopsoles, Yishmael. Avram had some, residue come after him, disqualified, puzzle, improper. Ason Yishmael, Bnei Ketura. Yitzchak Yotza Esav Chalul Alufav. Yitzchak had Esav and all of Esav's chieftains. What about me? Who's going to come out of me that's going to be a foul ball? Im Yisachos Beis Avonim Zolazo. If these two stones merge into one, then I'll know that fate will not befall me. So you have, in fact, three different ideas being conveyed here. Help understand the question being asked first. Rabbi Huda says, what? There's 12 stones representing the Shvatim to come. Rabbi Nechemya says it was 3 stones representing the Avos. And the Rabbanan say it was 2 stones representing just Avram and Yitzhak. What's the pshat? I tell you, there are no riddles like the riddles of Chazal. Divrei Chachamim v'chidosam. Unbelievable. So, again, there's no right answer. You just have to use our minds and speculate what it might be. It's not as if, I think I said it the first year, it's not as if there's a book written that explains all these things. The Rambam writes that he wanted to write such a book, but sadly just never got around to it. Would have made my life a lot easier. So what's the pshat? So the question is, it's the same pasuk. What was paramount in Yaakov's mind? So he knew he was going to Padan Aram. His parents sent him to get away from Esav, to find a wife, to become the recipient of the Birkas Avram at the end of last week's Sedra. You will be the beneficiary of the blessing of Avram. So he knew that was his future. The question is, what was paramount? What was the paramount thought, motivation, concern that he had going now to start the second, or really the third, stage of his life? Rabbi Yehuda says it was that he was to be the founder of the Am Hashem, which is very daunting. Look, Avram couldn't do it, didn't do it. Yitzchak couldn't do it, didn't do it. Now he's going to do it.
So the whole burden fell on him.
The burden fell on him, not only to found the Am Hashem, but you see what paralyzed Yaakov, so to speak. What my paralyzed is too strong a word. What apprehended him his whole life, what made him so filled with the worry, was that something would happen to one of his children and he wouldn't produce the 12 Shvatim. It was a nevuah they had from the very beginning. 12 Shvatim represent a nation, like Yishmael had 12 tribes as well. That's a nation. That's why Yaakov Avinu was inconsolable when Yosef disappeared, when Shimon disappeared, even Moshe and Binyamin with them. Because how would he be the progenitor of 12 tribes? To be the founder of the Am Hashem, that Rabbi Yehuda said was Yaakov's primary motivation here. Rabbi Nechemya said he had another apprehension, another concern, and that is his worthiness as a patriarch. What had he done up till now? Avram had 10 nisyonos. Yitzchak had the Akedah. What did Yaakov do that he could be a stone like the stones of his father and grandfather? Who's to say he could be a third stone? Kevan Shenisachu, when he had the Nevuah from God, that's what it means. When he had the Nevuah and everything was brought together in his mind, he had that resolution through Nevuah, then he realized that he'd be the progenitor of 12 tribes and he'd be one of the Avos, like his father and grandfather as well. And the Rabbanon say that the primary fear, which really encompasses both his worthiness as to be a patriarch and to be the founder of the Shvatim, was would he have Psolus as well? Would there be some of his offspring who go off the Derech like Avram had and like Yitzhak had as well? And that concerned him. That, in fact, perplexed him so much that when he went to sleep, this was the vision that he had, in which Hashem came to him, b'nevuah, and said, resolve the issues for him, told him exactly what he needed to hear, in fact.
This is prior to...
The land you're sleeping on, l'chadnen l'zarecha, and you'll be, ani Hashem elokei Avram avich velokei Yitzchak. I'm the God of your father, Avram, the God of Yitzchak, you'll be like them. And when Avram heard that benevuah, that was his vision, everything was resolved. Yes.
This is before he struggles with the Malach.
That's in Vayishlach. That's next week.
Yeah. So.
That's a different story altogether. That's a different type of fear.
Story.
That was the fear of his brother Esau. Because now that he had everything, he had only one. Everything was resolved in his life except one thing: his relation with his brother. And his brother was not the reasonable person that you could approach to and easily reconcile with. And that was a primary concern. And that different story, we get the taste from previous years, because how that resolves affects us to this day, as all these stories do. Okay, one of the points, skip a few lines. To a thing, I think Rashi may quote this as well, I don't remember. Reb Levi, it's next piece. Reb Levi, Reb Loza, B'Shem Yosef, Bar Zimmer, Amar, Asan Kamin Marzev, Ben Nasan Tachas Rosho, Shahayim Esirim and Achayos. That Yaakov took these stones, however many they were, and he made like a gutter around his head. He protected his head because he was afraid that animals would come and devour him. So he put the stones and placed them around his head, and that became like a not only a pillow but like a shield. Correct. Okay. What's the problem with Pshat? They can eat the rest of his body.
Sure.
So what does he really gain by placing these stones around his head? So again, the Medrash is not telling us ideas. The Medrash is telling us stories. The Medrash is conveying us ideas. Reb Levi said Yaakov had another fear as well. That's resonant of the last shot in Vayishkav Makom Ahu. That machlok is Reb Yehuda Ben Chaya. The Rosh is the essence. All right. The Rosh is really the chiyus of the body. You know, the brain, the source of our it enables us to understand ideas, to internalize values, to act upon them. So Yaakov knew at this point, he realized, if the head is protected, then the body will endure as well. And if the head is not protected, meaning we lose our sense of values, the part of us that enables us to connect with God, to understand God's ideas, if we lose the head, what good is the body anyway? So that's what Reb Levi is saying. He made this marzev around his head, all right, because he was afraid of the chayos. What are chayos? Chayos, not just animals. Chayos are every possible danger that exists in the world, the known and the unknown, and come upon us suddenly, unexpectedly. Those are chayos. They just pounce out of nowhere. And it's not literal animals. Could be also, but it's not literal animals. It's all the dangers that the world presents to the person who's striving for spiritual greatness. That is, from that is what Yaakov wanted to protect himself. Sometimes, by the way, please have a seat.
Excuse me, was this supposed to be a program?
If anything, it will be downstairs.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank
you. Sure.
Starting at 12.
Sometimes all we can do is wrap ourselves and hide until the danger passes over. Sometimes we have to engage with the danger, other times we have to withdraw and retreat and just protect ourselves, depending what the danger is, how prevalent it is, and what the qualities we have to combat it. Okay. Next, let's jump ahead, number 5. Bottom right, Vayaged Yaakov L'Rachel. So these will be more, how do you call them, quick texts. Vayaged Yaakov L'Rachel. What's the story? Okay, so Yaakov goes, he hatches a scheme. Behold, I'll meet my Mashert at the well trick. Sure enough, it works. Rachel comes, and Yaakov sees him. He runs. Vayishak Yaakov L'Rachel. Vayisos Kolo Vayevk. Vayaged Yaakov L'Rachel Ki Achi Aviyahu. Yaakov tells Rachel that behold, he is her father's brother. V'chi ven Rivkahu, he's the son of Rivka as well. Now, of course, he wasn't Yaakov's brother. All right, I mean, he wasn't Yaakov. He wasn't Lavan's brother, right? He was actually Lavan's cousin. I'm sorry, nephew. Lavan and Rivka were brother-sister. So he was a nephew, not a brother, but he said brother. What does it mean? That's a clue. Torah's giving us that something, they're trying to who are trying to teach us something. That's the Medrash. Vayigei Yaakov l'Rachel ki achi aviyahu v'chiven Rivka. He's also his brother. He's also Rivka's son. Im l'Ramos, Yaakov says, I know your father. If he's a cheat, so you should know ki achi aviyahu. I'm his brother. I could cheat him as well as he could cheat me. Meaning I'm onto that. Imutzatik, if he wants to treat me righteously, I'm Ben Rivka, who's a righteous woman. Okay? What's the pshat? It's a good point of Musar. There's no mitzvah to be a friar. No mitzvah to be a sucker in anything. The tzaddik is allowed to confront the rasha on the rasha's level, if it's necessary, before elevating him. And if you can't elevate him, Gemara says that in certain cases, almost a din latzmo. You could take the law into your own hands. The limited cases, those not here, don't listen literally what I'm saying. I gave a shiur a few years ago, so I think it's on tape also. There are certain cases, almost man could do dinulinasha. He could take the law into his own hands and seek justice under certain very, very limited parameters. But you could do that. Oh yeah?
Something about lying, somebody lied, and they were lying because...
Well, that would be... That would be Esav and Yaakov and the Brachos. Right. Okay, so that was the message, the subtle message that really Torah is conveying to us, but of course that Yaakov is conveying here as well. Alas, for Yaakov, didn't work out. It turned out Lavan was a much better cheater and deceiver than a Yaakov could ever be.
Yeah, so but in the end, Yaakov was able to...
In the end, it worked out well, that's correct.
That huge amount of...
It took him time to grow into it. Okay, number six, it's the next pasuk. V'toratz v'tagei l'aviha. She went to tell her father of their new visitor, the relative who had just come. Omer B'Yochanan. La'olam ein ha'isha regila elu leveis ima. A woman is usually accustomed to going to her mother, not to her father. All right. What's the reference here? It's in Parshas Chayisara when Eliezer first showed up and met Rivka also at the well. So the pasuk there says, "Va'toratz v'tageid leveis ima." She went to tell her mother about this strange visitor at the well, and Rivka goes to tell her father. Asive. So they said when Rabbi Yochanan made this point, they challenged him. Here it says Vataras Vatagei Lavia. So she went to her father. Amar lahem, Rabbi Yochanan said to them Shemesa ima. Her mother had already died. Ulumi hayol lahagid. There's only one person left to tell, one parent left, and that would be her father. What's the pshat? The natural identification of the daughters with the mother. But do I have to tell you that? That you would know. But that's a natural, the daughter sees herself in the place of the mother, like the son sees himself in the place of the father. Doesn't mean it can't be closeness on either side. Of course they can be. But the natural identification is one in which with the daughter, with the mother. That's why ain't her isha regila el levesima. Okay, turn the page. Let's see what we can accomplish in the time left. Number seven. Veinei le'arakos. So again, Yaakov goes into Laban's house, makes a deal with him to marry Rachel, to work for 7 years. 7 years are up, and... All right, it's the first deception of Yaakov. Ulovan Shtevanel, Shema Gadolo, Leah, Shema Ketona, Rachel, Ve'enei Leo Rakos. Leah's eyes were Rakos, Rachel Hoysoya Fastor, Vifasmare. What does Rakos mean? Enele Rakos is a medrash, Amoroi Derbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's Meturgaman, all right, or his, not always his interpreter, but really his mouthpiece. You know, in ancient times, they have microphones that we have today, so it was a big crowd. The Rebbe would teach, and there'd be a person bellowing what the Rebbe had said. Sometimes the same words, sometimes different words. Here, Rabbi Yochanan was, his Meturgaman said, Kodmoi, in his presence, Ve'enei Leo Hava Rakikin. Leah's eyes were weak, all right? bad eyesight. So Rabbi Yochanan did not accept that. And he said to his maturgaman, Einohi de'imohavu rakikin. Maybe your mother's eyes are weak, all right? Why would the Torah write a negative feature of somebody? And in the Medrash HaMavur here, it quotes an explanation. Here the Torah goes out of its way to say about a behemoth tmeya. It calls it a behemoth she'enena tahora. Not to use the word tmeya, and here the Torah is going to criticize Leah, point out the deficiency that she had. In fact, Rav Hirsch says a similar pshat, if you look at his Perish on Chumash. He says, God forbid, you think the Torah is critical of Leah here. But here Rashi mentions, Huma rakos, rakos mi bichya. Her eyes were soft from crying. Shahaya omrim, because the people, who are the people? Should say omro, the yentas were saying, Ka chayotanam, this is the deal. Hagadolo la gogol, baktano la katon. That Lavan has two daughters, Rivka's two sons, let the older marry the older and the younger marry the younger. She was crying and she would say, should be God's will, I should not fall into the fate, into the clutches of that evil person. Leah said this about her cousin, who was really unknown to her, but that was the reputation. The commentaries expand. She would ask, what type of person is my cousin Esav? Oh, you should know. He's a robber. He's a murderer. He's an idolater. He's a marauder of maidens. Yeah, that's the one. That's your Bashard. So to cry. Amar Rav Huna, kosher hi tefila. You see how powerful tefila can be. She bitlas a gzeira. Not only did her tefila nullify the gzeira, this harsh decree, v'lohod ela shekodem alachosah. She in fact married first. That was some powerful tefillah. She avoided having to marry Esav, and he even got to marry Yaakov before Rachel did. Okay, what's the pshat? First of all, who are these yentas that are saying, oh yeah, there. I mean, don't we usually require in Shiduchim a little more detail about the parties other than saying, oh, he's 23, she's 22, it's a perfect match. So here they're saying, he's old, he's the older one, Esau, the older twin. She's the older twin, Leah. Rachel, Yaakov, they're the younger twins. But they're married, Rachel, they're also twins. But they're married each other, it's perfect. Perfect for who? Who's saying these things? All right, so Rabbi Chait always used to say, it's a part of a longer shir, but you see that Avram's household was considered a nation already then. Nesiel kimata b'socheinu. So the gossipers would gossip about Avram's descendants too. About Yitzchak, of course. He had minted his own coins. He was considered a nation in his own right. Goy Godol. He had minted his own coins. So people were curious, all right? All the weekly magazines, you know, Menshin magazine of the day, Anashim, Nashim, they would write, oh, here's a picture of Yitzchak, and these are his two sons, and this is the family, and it's natural they'll get together. But why would they necessarily think that? I mean, to us it sounds bizarre. Aside from that point, we understand how the world took an interest in the Beis Avram. But why would we think that just because one is older and one is younger, therefore they'll marry whoever corresponds to them? Why should that be? So I think the pshat is this, and this is the idea the Medrash is conveying to us. Leah and Esav had similar personalities, right? But take, say, Leah. Leah was the Yatzonis. Like you see later from the next week's edge from Dino. Leah would go out, go into the fields, okay? She was more active. Rachel was much more homebound. Whose personality was similar to Leah's? Esav. They had similar personalities. So what would be so bad then if they married? Leah was a tzedekes. She could have domesticated Esav, right? In theory, she could have made him, kept him in the Beis Avram. So now the theory doesn't sound so implausible. You take a Leah Imenu, and maybe she will be able to work her magic on even an Esav, and make him into a normal person, make him into a mensch, make him into someone whom even his father thought was worthy of the material brachos, because that would be his role, the Beis Avram. He'd have a role too. What was the problem? Didn't work. Why didn't it work? Never
worked. Never does. Doesn't work to this day.
Yes. What's the shot?
Woman to make over a man.
Never marry a project. That's correct. Never marry a project. Because sometimes it does work, but usually it doesn't. Because you need a spouse. You don't need a project. And it's hard enough to find work out a marriage. If you have to work on it, start correcting everyone. That's the role of the wife, to correct the husband, not the wife. Okay. All right, let's see. We're running out of time, so let's just choose then. All right, I'll just mention this just so before, actually. Rachel comes to Yaakov and says to Yaakov, she's very upset. Of course, she's barren. Vatikane Rachel Bachoso, Perklam Pazar Aleph. Vatomer El Yaakov, Hoverly Vonim, Im Ein Mesonachi. She said to Yaakov, give me children! And if not, I'm going to die. Vayichar af Yaakov Rachel. Yaakov becomes angry at Rachel and says, Hasachas El Kimonochi, Hashem Aram Mech Pirotem. Am I in place of God? So a lot of people are critical of Yaakov also. I get angry at Rachel. Here she's bereft of children. All right, the Medrash number 8. She's like Choshev Kemes, Misha Ein Lo Banim. You have no children. It's like you're dead. You're not really part of the world because you have no offspring. You have no family. So how could he not have more compassion? He got angry at her. So I heard from my teacher and mentor, Rabbi Mann, Reuven Mann, who's now in Phoenix, Arizona, a nice pshat. When Rachel said to Yaakov, Hovo Livanim, give me children, that's what got him angry. Had she said to him, be mispal for me, like Rivka did, like his mother did, that's a legitimate request. But when you say, give me children, you're saying the tzaddik has some power, he's almost like God, okay? And that philosophical error, which is so extant today, is one that Yaakov could not let pass without comment or reaction. Vayichar af Yaakov u'Rachel. He became angry and says, that's such a misconception of what tzidkus is. No one has a power in the world like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not the way he set up this world. That's limited to God. So Asachas Elokim Anochi, take him in place of God? If the answer is that you need God's help, then the way to do that is not to turn to human beings, all right? Ben Adam Shein L'Tshua. The only answer to that is to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the answer. Because, in fact, it is all from Hashem. That's one of the keys. So, apropos of that, look at number 9. Ve'eskol kimus Rachel, mazchira zochala. What mazchira? What did God remember about Rachel? Okay, one of the zichronos we have on Rosh Hashanah. Zochala shtika solachosa. He remembered that she was silent. She knew the plan. Lavan gave Leah to Yaakov, not Rachel. Mosrola simonim. She gave her the signs. She was silent. Vadin no same. Shechnisa tsarasalvesa. She did even more than that, the Medrash says. She then brought Bilha into her home. All right? Because she said to Yaakov, if I can't have children, at least he ne'amasi vilha bo'eleha v'seleid al birkai v'ibonei gamanochi mimena. Take my maidservant Bilha, have children with her, so at least have a share in building the base Avram, the base Yaakov. Since she is my maidservant, I'll have a role in raising them, in educating them. So really two different vignettes, both evincing the same powerful, dramatic quality, Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice of Rachel Imenu, and Rachel Imenu personifies self-sacrifice, first for protecting her sister's honor, not embarrassing her, and exposing the fraud to Yaakov, and secondly by giving Bilha to Yaakov so she too would have a share in the base Yaakov in the future. It's that type of self-sacrifice when a person acts contrary to his or her own interests, that's what evokes Hashgacha Pratis. And that Hashgacha Pratis is symbolized by Vayizkor Elokim es Rachel. That's what God remembered. Time is a time, but it's that the fact that Rachel acted in such a way, such a self-sacrificial way, demonstrating a complete selflessness. Look, we can't even, the story is so familiar to us, but I dare say it's a level that we can't even aspire to. I mean, the fact that, you know, under the chuppah, right, you know, so a lot of brides today come completely, face completely covered, right? That's what's a bedekin to avoid the situation. But you know, the husband can't see them under the veils that they wear these days in certain communities. Imagine a girl saying, you know what, I'm younger, my older sister, you go, put the veil on. It's unbelievable. Nobody would even think of such a thing. That type of Mesiras Nefesh by Yisrael Kimetz Rachel. The fact that she did that and said nothing, and it wasn't a fluke, wasn't a one-time event. She did the same thing with Bilha years later. That's Hashgach Pratis that befits a tzaddik and a tzaddikas, and that's our story here. Okay, I thank you all very much.